This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther. I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at wvuafm.ua.edu. You can also download the Crimson White app and just click on the 90.7 live streaming link. And if you have any show ideas, you can email those to me. I think we've got November, and then we'll finish up at the end of November. So we have a few more shows that are already booked out, already scheduled, but we're definitely going to need some topics for the spring semester. So if you have ideas, send those to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using your show topic. And hopefully I'll remember to give out this email throughout the show. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Tonight's topic, I've been looking forward to this topic for a while since I booked it. It's how humor and laughter benefit mental health, because I think it is so important. And, you know, a lot of people who we see here at the Counseling Center, they're just so wrapped up in their school life, their academic life, their social life, that they really forget to, they take the little things for granted, and they just forget to have a good time. They're so busy trying to have a good time that they forget how to have a good time. I don't know how to explain it. My guest tonight is Dr. Brian King, and Dr. King is an applied biopsychologist. He's been a professional comedian, informative speaker, and he's an expert in the study of humor and laughter. We were just talking before the show started. He's published, I know, at least two books. The Art of Taking It Easy is his most recent publication in 2019. But then one that I came across was in 2016, The Laughing Cure. So both of those sound intriguing to me and just kind of fun to read, you know, for leisure. I could probably read it for both leisure and for, you know, professional, for my counseling practice. So thank you for being on the show, Dr. King.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, no, I actually wrote those books, both of them. My writing style is very much written for, like, for entertainment. You know, I want people to enjoy reading. They're not textbooks. You know, in fact, one of the biggest complaints I get, and I do, you know, I do get negative criticisms, you know, from my books. Not as much, but one of the biggest complaints that people have is that they were hoping for more detail. They're hoping for more science. And I'm like, the book is called The Laughing Cure. You know what I mean? The other one's called The Art of Taking It Easy. Learn how to take it easy. You know, it's not a textbook. It's not written in that mindset. It is very much something that people say reads like a novel, you know, and that's my writing style. That's my style for everything. And I'm pitching a new book that's going to, I feel like all books should come in threes. So I'm pitching another book. I don't have a title for it yet, but hopefully I'll be, you know, continuing that progression as I get to the next.
I gave you a brief introduction as an applied psychologist. How did you get into this field? How did you mesh, you know, being a stand-up comedian along with psychology? I mean, it is funny if you think about it. But
the quick answer is that I couldn't get into the University of Alabama. I couldn't either. That was it. I went to the University of Texas. It was my as an undergraduate, and And I started shopping around. I knew I wanted to leave Texas. And so I started shopping around programs to pursue my PhD. And I missed a deadline for a lot of applications for some of them because I was that kind of college student. I might have taken it a little too easy with regard to some things in my life, you know.
I think many could relate.
Yeah, but there were a few colleges in the world out there that I hadn't yet missed the deadline on applying to, and I shot out some applications, and luckily I convinced the University of New Orleans to take a chance on me. Yeah, so I ended up moving down there. Now, applied biopsychology is a very specific sounding degree. I was interested in the brain. I was interested in neuroscience. You know, as an undergrad, I got really interested in it. We had at the University of Texas, we had such a good faculty in that area. And then now, of course, at the time, it was the emerging field of evolutionary psychology. And so, you know, talking about how, genetics might play into behavior and how we could sort of retroactively understand our behavior in terms of earlier time periods and so forth. It really captured my attention. The only program in New Orleans that they had that even remotely fit what my interest level where it was applied biopsychology, which is a fancy way of saying neuroscience. But they had to have, at the time, they were part of the LSU system. And so they had to have a different degree than what was offered at LSU. And so that's the title they came up with. I always say neuroscience. Because it just sounds, you know, people easier know what that is.
People understand it, you know.
People
better.
Don't know what biopsychology is, or you know, and so I put that, and so that's sort of how I ended up with that degree. The piece to your question is how I ended up being a comedian who is also a neuroscientist. That's a little bit more complicated. I wanted to be a comedian almost my whole life. I think there was a point when I was young where I realized that there were people out there who make a living by making jokes, you know, I would watch comedians on TV, and I would stay up late and watch Saturday Night Live and David Letterman and those kinds of shows, you know, and I just started to develop a fascination for comedy and appreciation for comedy. Yeah. But I was also fed a lot of information about being grounded and being realistic, you know. And so I was always told, well, you know, artists have the career path for an artist isn't always very cut and dry, you know.
Right.
And so, so if I were to pursue,
how are you going to make a living doing that?
Exactly. Even though there are people making a living and a really good living, those are the rare examples, you know. And so I was like, well, wait. The practical wisdom that I was being fed was that get a degree first, then pursue the creative thing, you know. So I was in Austin, and Austin is a great town for comedy, but I was not doing comedy. I was like, well, I gotta get my degree first, you know. And then I moved to New Orleans, and New Orleans is not really a great town for comedy. It's a good town if you like covers of like old jazz songs. You know, it's like it's not even really a good, it didn't even produce a whole lot of like contemporary music. It's all like, well, let's play When the Saints Go Marching In one more time, you know. So there wasn't a lot of comedy opportunities there. When I got out of my PhD and I started moving around following jobs, there wasn't a lot of comedy opportunities. You know, it wasn't until I found myself in San Francisco at a job that I absolutely hated. And I was walking down the street and I saw a sign that said something like open mic night tonight or comedy open mic. My friend who's walking with me, and I'm just complaining about how much I hate my job. My friend says, didn't you always want to be a comedian? And I was like, you know what? I've been putting that off way too long. And so I got on that stage and I got fired a month later because I was doing comedy too much.
You didn't care about that, Tom.
By that time, I was like, you know what? I found something that gives me joy, and this is what I want to do. My biggest recommendation I have for people is don't wait. If there's something that you identify that you really want to pursue, try it. Do what you can.
That's really interesting that you said that, because I just had a student before we started the show little while ago, we were talking about the same thing. He's in a major who really doesn't fit his personality. He's a creative, mm-hmm. and he's fighting that, basically, yeah. is what he's doing. So this is interesting. Hey, talk more about the connection, though, because you, as a neuroscientist, I think you know a little bit about the connection between, you know, why humor is good for the brain and the body. I mean, what do you want to tackle first? You want to go for the brain?
I see the brain and the body as a singular thing. You know, I mean, the brain is an organ in the body, and it makes sense for a lot of people to make that distinction. But when I talk about the body, I'm including the brain. Humor is essential to human beings. It's not just related to human beings. Other animals have humor. They express humor and they respond to humor. You know, like in laboratories, it's been shown that dogs and laugh, that cats laugh, that obviously chimpanzees, yeah. they respond to humor because they're kind of similar to us, you know, mm-hmm. and they have the whole that. But even lab rats have been shown in laboratory settings to respond to humor. They have a laugh response. The reason I mention other species is because it's not isolated. You know, we tend to think of things that human beings do as being the thing that separates us from the animal kingdom. You know, mm-hmm. but getting back to my interest in evolutionary psychology, you know, we realize, well, if we consider our set of genetics has evolved over a long period of time and lots of different interactions and so forth, then we are, we carry with us a lot of things that evolved earlier, including laughter. So we look at humor and we look at the way other animals use it and we look at the way human beings use it. Mm-hmm. For me, and I talk about this in my most recent book, our primary use of humor is to manage stress. And yeah. to help overcome difficulties in life, to help change our mood, you know, from if we're feeling bad, we can laugh, we can feel better, we can make ourselves feel better, we can lighten situations that are tense by creating yes. social laughter, you know, we can create bonds with other people. Laughter has a lot of benefit, but the core, right? The core is to help alleviate stress. And with that comes a whole lot of other benefits.
Well, and, you know, I told you before we started the show, I did some research and the way I came about learning about you is a presentation that I was invited to attend, a virtual presentation about this topic. And I researched and found the slides from that presentation. And I love all the quotes. And I'm going to mention some of those quotes later because they're just funny. They're hilarious. Famous people, you know, who've said things about laughter and how important it is. And, you know, one of the things that you've talked about is the different kinds of illnesses or ailments that humor is used with. And it mm-hmm. is not just for stress. I'm talking about serious sicknesses, cancer, right. Pain. I was shocked to know, I didn't put this together, but dental pain, just laughing gas, what we call laughing gas. I mean, I didn't even think about that until I was reading it, you know, in one of your slides. So we're going to take a break right now, though. And when we come back, let's talk about that a little bit more in detail. And then we'll take an email question if that's okay with you, okay?
It sounds good to me.
Just hang on. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about how humor and laughter benefit your mental health. And my guest is Dr. Brian King. Brian, I don't even know where you're located now. Are you actually in San Francisco, New Orleans? Where are you?
During the pandemic, well, prior to the pandemic, I lived a nomadic life. my family, I was doing so many gigs. Like I would do public speaking gigs and comedy shows. That I was on the road all the time. And about almost six years ago, actually, I decided to give up my permanent residence, which I had, and I was in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I went to Los Angeles because I was trying to get famous. And that didn't work out so well, which is why you and I are talking.
No offense.
No offense intended. But honestly, if I was famous, it'd be a lot harder to get me on the phone. Oh, yeah. You know?
I'd have to go through an agent, which we have had that many times. Yes.
But so it's it's like you call me and I pick up and you're like, can I please speak with Dr. Brian King? I'm like, speaking? I'm like, really?
No. I can't even get to Nick Saban. You know, he's 200 feet from me. Maybe.
I should start pretending to be my own answering service, but anyways, I moved to L.A. And then the thing about L.A. is that I would get called to do like auditions and go to this show and that show. But I was always on the road. My touring and public speaking career started to really take off when I lived in LA. And since, those sorts of gigs always come with housing, I felt it was wasteful to have a place of my own. So yeah. I gave it up. I lived on the road. When I wasn't on a gig, I would go somewhere fun. Like I would go, travel Europe for a month go hang out in Buenos Aires, Argentina, or something like that. You know, along the road, I picked up a partner and then we had a kid. So like my ever expanding entourage kept growing.
Bigger and bigger.
Well, this is a long answer to a short question. To get to the answer, the pandemic happened and all my gigs were canceled, which meant loss of income, but also loss of housing. And the whole world is saying you need to shelter at home. You know, well, I hadn't had a home for roughly about 5 years at that point. And so we were kind of like, what do we do? Where do we go? Definitely not going to California, because I was watching the news about how various places were reacting to the pandemic, you know. And the most hospitable place actually seemed to be Texas. Texas was really open. I have a 3-year-old kid at the time. She's now 4. And I wanted her to be able to go to playgrounds and not have to like police tape all around the slides. You know what I mean? Like that was just, I didn't want to.
I know you're being serious, but I think you're being funny too.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of being a comedian.
That's the beauty. Double entendre. Hey.
So we did. Yeah. We settled in Dallas and I've been here ever since, and we love it, but I think we might be moving on pretty soon
if you've done so much traveling for a lot of your life, you miss it. You know, you miss
I do.
It. You get cabin fever, right?
And, you know, I mentioned I went to UT as an undergrad. I never thought I would move back to Texas. I love Texas. I got no problem with it, but I always wanted to like move on and see the world and just be spent. Yeah. And the pandemic brought me back.
Well, it's interesting that you've lived an interesting life. That's what a lot of these college students who I talk to, they dream about doing what you've done. Not just the stand-up comedy, but traveling, living other places. That's what they want to do, you know.
Like I was like what they would call a digital nomad before it became like a popular term, you know. I wasn't exactly digital either. I was in front of audiences, you know, day after day traveling. But it just didn't make sense to return back to Los Angeles for a couple of days, only to go back on the road and waste airlines. You know,
it's
waste
expensive.
Flights.
Yeah,
it really is. So
hey, let's take an email question. You ready?
Yep.
Let me see what we got. Hold on. This person says, "I am curious about how." Okay, kind of what we've already talked about. Let's see. I am curious about how laughter and humor affect long-term changes in the brain based on the concept of neuroplasticity. This person knows what they're talking about. Any suggestions for cultivating laughter and humor for clients who tend to be extremely negative? Oh my gosh, sure. That's a good question. And I've got somebody in mind right now. I bet Catherine does too.
So neuroplasticity is an often misunderstood concept by the general public. You know, it's not, and it's even misunderstood by neuroscientists. I mean, it really is. When it comes down to it, neuroplasticity is very simply our modern understanding of how the brain learns. That's it. That's really, when I talk about neuroplasticity, I like to demystify it and just say, like, all we're referring to is the learning process.
Okay.
You know, we're learning, we're talking about how the brain learns. And if you want to learn something, your brain has to restructure itself. It has to create new pathways. It has to do all these things. And that's what neuroplasticity does, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's, it is, we're talking about, we're not talking about anything new or different. We're talking about our existing ability to learn. And we've known for a long time that laughter facilitates learning. Mm-hmm. We know that you can look, you're at a university. I was at one point in my life a university professor. And you can look at reviews of professors. When I was a professor, I used to like to go to ratemyprofessor.com.
Oh, yeah. One pepper, two pepper, yeah. All that.
See,
yeah.
See what the students are writing about me. Almost every positive remark had to, I really like the way he teaches. He makes it funny and it's easier to learn.
That's
and
right.
So there's already an inherent recognition in the value of humor in facilitating learning. And what that is basically, you know, like we this is common knowledge. We already know this. Neuroplasticity, you throw that in a mix, and we know that humor helps to produce a hormone called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And brain-derived neurotrophic factor stimulates the growth of new dendrites that allow neurons to communicate with one another or create effectively new pathways to facilitate learning. But all that is overcomplicating. It really does come down to being in a good mood makes you more receptive to information. When you are in a good mood, you're not stressed. And when you're stressed, you are not creating new pathways in your brain. So when you go to sleep, you're not creating long-term memories. I always tell people, if you think back to college, if you ever had an opportunity where you were cramming for an exam and you spent, several hours filling your head full of information that you were holding in your working memory, and you went into that exam and you took the exam and answered all the questions, and almost immediately following the exam, you forgot the information. I think a lot of us have had that kind of experience, right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't create long-term memories when your brain is under stress. Because that stress inhibits the production of BDNF in the brain. And so when you are experiencing stress, you have a lack of ability to learn. When you are laughing on a regular basis and when you are generally in a positive mood, mm-hmm. you're not stressed. And so that the absence of that stress facilitates learning through the production of BDNF, but also through minimizing the amount of stress that would impede that learning. So a professor that puts you in a good mood while you're in a lecture, you're more likely to remember stuff. And that's true of anything out in or out of the college context. Anything you would learn in life, it is learning is easier when it is fun and puts you in a good mood.
What's the neurotransmitter you mentioned? Is it BDNF?
BDNF, yeah, brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Do some people lack those?
That's something I'm not sure of, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. The question that the person had, the email question was about changing somebody who's really, really negative. And what I first thought of, I think of a client who I have who has a disability.
Right.
And it's a brain disability. I'll say that. And I don't know if she is capable. We laugh, mm-hmm. during session, but I don't know if she's capable. Sometimes it crossed my mind. Is she capable of being, is this a learned behavior sometimes when she laughs, or is she really feeling joy?
Well, there's two. I don't know if there are some people who have a deficiency or not. I don't know that. But I do know behaviorally, our behavior influences how much of it we have in us. So Exercise and intellectual stimulation are two ways to increase BDNF. Stress decreases it and lack of exercise decreases it. So it becomes a catch-22, really, is that when you develop an emotional disorder like anxiety, or you develop depressive feelings, you're not that active. You know, you don't feel like doing things. And so that lack of activity might be perpetuating what's happening. I don't know if there could have been a pre-existing condition or not, but once you fall into a behavior pattern that excludes joy, then your brain is not going to be very receptive to it. You're not going to be seeking it out much, you know. And you can to beat that cycle is very similar to beating the cycle of overeating. I'm a big man, and I've been a big man my whole life. And we all know that who struggle with body weight. We all know how to change our condition. It's just doing it that is difficult. You know, you actually have to
discipline.
Yeah, you actually have to break the cycle.
Yeah.
How do you break the cycle of depression or anxiety? Well, you have to get off the couch and go do stuff and go talk to people and go interact with people. And unfortunately, those are the things that the anxiety is preventing you from doing, you know, so it becomes very much a difficult situation to break out of.
And I think people get in that comfortable rut.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
They get in that comfortable rut. You know, I mentioned the quotes that you have in your slides from your presentations. And one of the funniest, I love Mel Brooks. He, some people think he's silly. And let me tell you, for those who don't know, who weren't born then, and make me feel 100 years old, Mel Brooks was, I think he's passed away. Mel Brooks was a director and a writer, and he wrote a lot of slapstick comedy, which I usually hate. But Mel Brooks, some of the movies I love, Silver Streak, mm-hmm. Blazing Saddles. Let me think of some more. Young Frankenstein right now, this time of the year. I love Young Frankenstein. But this is one of the quotes from Mel Brooks. And you have to have a sense of humor to get this. Tragedy is when I cut my finger. Comedy is when you fall into an open sewer and die. Mm-hmm. And I mean...
It's all about perspective, right? Like if it happens to me, it's sad. If I watch somebody, if I watch it, like I always tell people, the old banana peel gag that you used to see in a lot of slapstick movies,
Candid camera.
Yeah, or candid camera, exactly. Somebody slips on a banana peel, you know, like if it happens to you, you're going to be all like, man, that's I can't believe I fell. It hurts, blah, blah, blah. But if you're watching it, like there's some person across the street, you know, they slip and fall and they drop their groceries everywhere and things are flying and stuff. It's kind of funny, you know, once you're removed, if you're removed.
Some people laugh too out of nervousness too.
Yeah. But either way, you're helping to minimize your own stress response. Right. And that's the important thing, is getting rid of that cortisol.
We're going to take a break right now, another break. And I keep saying when we come back, we're going to talk about the different illnesses. I really do. I'm going to get to that first thing. We've got another email question also. But I want you to talk about Norman Cousins. That's one of the other things I read in your research that you were talking about. The Norman Cousins, was he an actor or a comedian himself? I mean, this is a long time ago, but it's a very interesting story. Can you do that for us when we come back?
I sure can.
Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about humor and laughter benefiting mental health, and it's very important. And I think when you start doing the research on it, you start reading more about how important it is to laugh and how laughter, you know, I have actually talked to students about what movies they watch, what TV shows they watch, what are they interested in, what's bringing laughter into their life on a daily basis. My guest is Dr. Brian King. He is a neuroscientist. I'm going to call you that because that's easier to say than a biopsychologist, and also a stand-up comedian. Tell us a few of, you know, how do you have any gigs coming up? Do you have any performances coming up?
You know, nothing huge, nothing that you're going to commute from Birmingham to come see, you know, but I'm doing shows around basically the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I've got a couple of road gigs coming up in Florida. You know, they're specialty little, you know, markets that are kind of like, it's just the touring is just starting to pick up.
And oh, yeah.
I'm hoping that, you know, maybe by mid 2022. Boy, it's a lot of twos in one year.
Must mean something.
Yeah, I'm hoping by somewhere around the halfway point of next year that I might have a full calendar, but you never know. I mean, every time something looks like it's happening and something else deters.
It's like we're going in cycles.
Right. I think I'm going to start looking for adjunct teaching gigs pretty soon. So if you know anybody in the psych department down there.
I'll tell you, we have a new college. We have a new college that's totally separate. I mean, it's called New College. That's the program. And I think some of the classes that you could teach on this would be appropriate for New College. It's kind of like a, I don't want to say a catch-all, but you can tailor your own degree.
Ooh,
and so some of the actual classes are unique.
And it's a dangerous proposition to offer entering freshmen, let me tell you.
Very. Hey, when we went to break, I talked about the ailments, and I mentioned the dental pain before the last break or when we came back. And laughing gas, obviously, which a lot of people have to have just for cleanings.
Yep.
I
just want to say, like, with pain, I mean, you mentioned dental pain, and I specifically talk about dental pain because there is, there have been research that where they, you know, in dentist offices, you know, conducted by dentists, but it's just pain in general.
Yes.
You know, as we laugh, we, among other things that our body does, is we release hormones called endorphins. These endorphins, everybody's heard of, but they are the endogenous opioids. It's the hormone that makes us feel happy and good. And it also has this benefit of reducing our sensitivity to pain. So when you are full of endorphins, you are much less sensitive to pain. And if you are experiencing pain at the time you start to produce endorphins, then your sensation of that pain is going to be minimized, might even go away. Laughter distracts from pain because it gives you something else to think about, but it also physically makes us less, experience less pain. So that's that. But as far as other illnesses, so I've mentioned stress a few times, and the reason why I keep going back to that is because almost everything that we suffer as human beings has stress as a component. Almost everything, you know, and from mental health issues like depression, anxiety, even substance use, you know, to physical things like hypertension, diabetes, even osteoporosis. A lot of people don't realize osteoporosis is a stress related disorder. Yeah. Stomach issues, you know, erectile dysfunction. There's all sorts of things that are related to stress. And so even cancer, our immune system, when we are under stress, our immune system is suppressed. And therefore, you know, if we have cancer, or if we're sort of disposed to develop cancer, we have an increased likelihood, you know. There are so many systems and so many things that we suffer that directly relate to stress. That's why I keep talking about why laughter helps minimize stress is kind of the most important thing, in my opinion. When we, let's say, for example, cancer. So laughter increases the activity of natural killer cells and gamma interferon cells. And these are components to our immune system that help us to fight cancer.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, we not only remove the stress component from the disorder, but by laughing and by experiencing humor or thinking about things in a humorous way, but we also actually give a boost to certain elements of our immune system that directly help us to to fight it.
To fight it, right.
And this is not unknown. You know, this is not something that, you know, I'm just some guy. Hey, I just happen to have this one piece of research nobody else has seen. People are aware of this. You know, Cancer Treatment Centers of America have laughter therapists at all of their centers across the country for this very reason. They have somebody on staff whose job it is to make cancer patients laugh because it helps them to heal and recover. And, you know, as a comedian, I've had some very rewarding experiences, but I got to say, I don't think there's any more rewarding use of humor than helping somebody fight cancer through making them laugh. I really do.
Well, and one of the slides in your presentation mentioned Patch Adams. You know, he's the famous physician and clown. And I think in the film, I think Robin Williams played him, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah. And so my next question is how can somebody like me, who's a therapist, and Catherine also, how can we use, I guess, appropriate humor, you know, I'm kind of naturally funny. Don't you think, Catherine? I'm a little bit funny. a little bit. And so I think some of it just comes naturally, but I think there's times where you shouldn't use it either. You know, somebody tells you they're suicidal,
sure.
Back off.
I think as a comedian, let me just say that as a comedian, I feel like there's nothing that is outside the realm of potentially making a joke of. You know, that's my comedian answer.
Isn't that what comedy is?
Yeah. We live in an age where comedy has been brought through the ringer with regard, you know, in the media.
Yes.
Even before this, I was reading some stories about famous comics, and I don't want to contribute to that dialogue. So I won't mention anybody by name or talk about the issues. But the point is, there's stuff out there right now challenging comedy and challenging that assumption that we can make a joke about anything. And you know, I don't like that that's the world we live in, but that's the world we live in. You know?
Can you imagine Eddie Murphy, George Carlin,
I know.
Richard Pryor, Red Fox?
Oh, yeah. No, it'd be terrible. But to get to your question though, I'm first of all, I'm not a therapist. I have done therapy in the past, and I choose not to make that my career for a number of reasons, really. But I sometimes do say the wrong thing. You know, I sometimes make a joke that doesn't hit well, doesn't land well. Mm-hmm. The intent is obviously to make a joke. The intent is to make the other person laugh. But then you say a word that triggers an emotion, and it just doesn't work out. So my advice is always, like you just said, you're a naturally funny person. Allow yourself to be funny. You know, allow yourself to be who you are. Allow yourself to make a joke. Allow yourself to make jokes with your patients or with your clients, as long as they are receptive to it.
You can kind of tell.
Yeah. Everybody has their own dynamic. You know, some people, they don't want to joke about things. They don't want to talk about things or whatever. But everybody, I would also, for those people, emphasize the value of taking things less seriously, you know, and to the value of sort of taking the power away from that subject or that topic, you know, by making a joke about it. You know, I started off by saying one of the uses that we have of humor is to minimize tension, you know, as a socially, you know, and so you can minimize tension in your own brain by making a joke about something. I've suffered some horrible situations in my life, and I almost immediately make a joke about it. You know, Freud said it was a defense mechanism. I don't care to invoke Freud, but my point is that the idea that this is what humor was for has been around for a long time, and we allow ourselves, you know.
We have so many, I see so many students who they tell me they can't shut their brain off at night.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I would say this, but sometimes, like you just said, you're taking yourself too seriously. But if they're taking themselves too seriously, sometimes when you say it like that, it comes off, I don't know, like you're kind of telling them what to do. So you have to kind of tippy-toe around it a little bit and get around to don't take yourself so seriously. It's just life, you know.
The problem is that when people are in that mindset, they put so much emphasis on whatever it is that they're dealing with that they can't see the bigger picture. Right. And so when somebody comes in and says, just relax, it's not a big deal. You know, they're like, what do you mean it's not a big deal? This is a huge deal.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, then they think you're not taking them seriously.
Exactly. So, you know, the best, I mean, I, again, I'm not advising therapists because I'm not one, but I say the best course of action is sort of validate the way they feel and provide an opportunity for them to be able to cope with things maybe differently. You know, part of the reason they feel the way they do is because they lack certain coping skills. And so you can, you know, you can say, well, you know, without making jokes or without, you know, this or that, you can just say, look, you know, reframing, you know, obviously that's something that, you know, a lot of people talk about cognitive restructuring. You know, part of reframing is to think about something differently. That's the whole basis of humor.
Yeah.
That is to try to, you know, reimagine the situation in sort of a different context or in a different from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It's hard to sometimes it's hard to do that, but if they can ever get to that point, then you can see that they see it's the light at the end of the tunnel and not a train coming, you know?
Right, right. And so, that's a really hard place to get people to, depending on how far down they've gotten.
You that's know, right. And, you know, some of it is chemicals. Some mm-hmm. of it is chemicals, and I really believe sometimes they can't help it. You know,
sometimes they
can't, whether it's genetics or situational, whatever.
Yep.
We're going to take our last break, okay, Dr. Brian, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about how laughter and humor benefit your mental health. And my guest is Dr. Brian King. He is in Texas, and he is talking about everything. We're all over the board today. But I still want to mention your books. This is fascinating. And you're working on one right now that you don't even have a title for. And I don't know how close you are to finishing it. Are you close to finishing? Yeah.
Haven't even started the first paragraph. It's ideas. My publisher trusts me enough that I pitched it to her over the phone. She said, that's great. Give me something in writing. And I haven't yet gotten to that point. You know, I've been kind of busy lately.
Well, your most recent book, The Art of... I just have gone brain dead.
Taking it easy. The art of taking it easy.
I need to take it easy more. The art of taking it easy. It was just published though in about 2019 before COVID hit. So it's pretty new still.
It's still new, and there's still a whole audience that hasn't found it yet because you know they're coming out with a paperback version pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully an audio book will come out in English. You know, I specify English because there's already a Polish audio book and a German audio book. And both of those two audiobooks, by the way, were recorded by local comedians in either Poland or Germany who are way more famous than I am. So if those books are successful in those markets, it's because of like the star power of the person reading it.
I'm glad you mentioned this because I didn't have this question written down, but I'm curious, have you found in any of your research or any of your travels, what cultures are funnier than us? You know, they don't take life so serious.
Yeah,
I feel like Americans are hilarious. Don't get me wrong, but sometimes I feel like we're just too serious. And so what cultures have you lived in or traveled to that you just feel a natural.
So I can't. The problem is that people vary more than cultures do. You know, and so there's more. There's always more individual variation than between cultures. You know, but I will say that there are certain parts of the world that they just are more happy and jovial.
Yeah.
Probably one of the happiest place in the United States is got to be Hawaii. And I can't imagine anyone being depressed in Hawaii. Although, as I say that, I know somebody who suffers from depression in Hawaii. I'm like, how is that possible? Move to Minnesota and get depressed.
Exactly. You know?
But the yeah, exactly. But you know, I found the Netherlands to be just full of just humorous, enjoyable people. Traveling South America, you know, and really, I think the closer you get to the equator, people just seem to have more energy and are more lively. Wow. And I'm not sure what that is, but you know, there's that doesn't seem to follow economic patterns. It doesn't seem to follow you know, like Western development, you know, standards or whatever. It just seems to be, you know, like there's certain cultures that, you know, that just emphasize more sort of good living.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you find a culture that emphasizes hard work. You're probably going to see fewer people making jokes at the office or, you
stress.
Know, fewer, you know. And so there's, you know, but it's hard to say one for the other. Canada is, you know, full of people that are just
a lot of famous comedians come
yeah,
from Canada.
Exactly.
I mean, come
exactly.
on. What was yeah, it? SCTV used to be on?
Yeah. Just for Laughs Comedy Festival.
Martin Short. Think of all the Eugene Levy. Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, great, 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 great people. And then actors with comedic timing, like Michael J. Fox, you know, like, you know, Ryan Reynolds, you know, one of the funniest. I hate that Ryan Reynolds is so funny because he's also like incredibly attractive.
Yeah.
I feel like if you let
the double whammy.
Let those of us who are a little bit less attractive be the funny ones. You know what I mean? Like that's our thing.
Here,
that's the one thing. That's the one thing we have. Let us be funny. But no, he's gonna go be hot and attractive and
right.
funny. You know?
That's right. What about gender differences? What about men versus women?
There is actually, that's the one area where there is pretty concrete evidence for. There are some very significant gender differences in humor. And you can observe them and you probably even know what they are. There's a lot more male comedians out there than women. Does that reflect bias in the industry? Does that reflect, you know, like the, you know, that women aren't encouraged to go into entertainment? You know, but we actually have research that shows that when you look at people you look at people in dyads, you know, groups of two, and then you study their behavior, you see that, women spend a lot more time laughing when they communicate than men do. You know,
yes.
On the other hand, men spend a lot more time trying to make their communication partner laugh. So there is a inherent behavioral thing going on there.
Uh-huh.
I actually talk about this a little bit in my book too. There's also some evidence in the brain that suggests that when we laugh, and as I mentioned, I think I mentioned earlier, when we laugh, it we get certain benefits like endorphins. Well, we also get a benefit of a surge of a transmitter called dopamine in part of our brain that we commonly refer to as our reward center,
uh-huh.
right? So laughter is very rewarding. And the reason why that's significant is because when we get a reward or when we get a surge of dopamine in our reward center after a behavior, we're likely to do that behavior again. Like whatever got us to that point is going to be learned and conditioned.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's where learning comes from. So we learn to laugh because of that reward. Well, the reward benefit shown in the female brain is actually greater than the reward benefit showed in a male brain. Like
wow.
I love to laugh. And it feels great for me to laugh, but I will never know what it's like to laugh as a woman. I will never know what that feels like. It must feel, it feels different. I'm assuming, you know, it feels different. We all
I've ever known.
Yeah. like we can both admit that we enjoy it, but I don't mean you specifically, but women will receive a larger benefit than the average man with regard to responding to laughter.
That is so fascinating, isn't it?
I think that, plus the behavioral thing I talked about earlier, helps to explain why there's more men in comedy than women. Yeah. Obviously, there are some disadvantages that are present in the entertainment industry and so forth, but I feel like there's something to that. There is sort of a natural difference. You know, my wife, Sarah, she met me at one of my seminars and I made her laugh during that seminar. And I like to say that that's why she fell in love with me.
That's why I fell in love with my husband.
There you go.
It is hilarious.
And I try really hard to make her laugh all the time.
We can't argue. I mean, we argue, but I can't pout at him because he's just too funny. You know, so we don't stay mad long. It's nice. It's nice. You know, it's nice to have somebody around you who, he's not silly, but he's just, he can make fun of things that I think are funny, you know?
And, you know, it's an interesting thing about that, because as you mentioned, we like to be around people to make us laugh. That's true for men. I want to be around somebody that makes us laugh, makes me laugh. But she's also got other qualities that I like being around.
And that's another show. That might be a topic for our spring show.
And that's a fundamental difference that also contributes to the difference between our processing of humor and our expression of humor, that's something I explore a little bit in The Laughing Cure as like a side note.
This has been a totally fascinating show. I could talk for, I mean, it goes by so fast. We didn't even get to half of the questions. I mentioned Norman Cousins. We didn't even get to him. He's like a famous actor who had arthritis, didn't he?
Yeah, let me go ahead and briefly give you some. So Norman Cousins was a journalist. Norman Cousins was, he wasn't a scientist. He wasn't a psychologist or anything. He was a journalist, but he suffered a condition that caused him a great deal of pain. The reason why I say it's a condition is because we don't really know what he had. That's part of the issue with Norman Cousins, is that he was on assignment in Moscow. And I think it was, I can't remember, like the 50s, maybe. I don't have this stuff memorized, but he was on assignment during a period where he couldn't get a really good diagnosis of his condition. And so they would try things that didn't work. They tried this, it didn't work, and so forth. He got no relief. He had come across the idea of laughter helping to manage pain through some of his readings and so forth. And when nothing else was working for him while he was in this hospital in the middle of Moscow, he decided to check himself out and put himself in a hotel. And at the time, there was no VHS or no streaming of Netflix and anything. Uh-huh. So he got his hands on any film that was comedic in nature he had a projector. He got his hands on projector and film, and he got reels of the Three Stooges, and he got, he would watch these things, and Gilligan's Island, I think, is one of the shows he said that he would watch a lot. And he prescribed himself a dose of laughter, a daily dose of laughter. And as a result, he believed that he extended the length of his life. You know, the doctors in Russia who diagnosed him didn't give him a good, a long time left,
Right.
But his pain, he claimed his pain went away, and he claimed that, that he extended the length of his life. Now, that's all sort of up to debate, historians, and there's a little bit of controversy there. Yeah. The details are fuzzy, but the reason why his story has value, as far as I'm concerned, is that he wrote a book. He wrote a book about his experience, and that book led to a scientific interest in the benefits of laughter, which ultimately put me where I am right now. Some people throughout history have addressed, like what is humor, what is, why do we laugh, like Freud, I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until Norman Cousins claimed that he cured himself by laughing that people started to pay attention and started to do some real research around it. And so that's where I think he deserves the most credit.
There's a connection because of what we started talking about at the beginning of the show with the neurotransmitters, the endorphins, the dopamine. It's real. It's real. That's fascinating. I didn't remember that he had a book. But that might be something interesting for listeners to read along with maybe
after they read my book.
That's right.
After they,
yeah.
read my book first, yes. Because you know, because Norman's dead. He's not. Yeah. He's not trying to support a 5-year-old kid with his book money. You know.
I don't have sound effects. I do them myself. Thanks again.
My kid demands that I feed her. I don't understand this about kids. They're like, you can't just go forage outside. What's the yard about?
Well, you can, but you may die.
That's true.
Listen, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on the show. I know that you're probably busy, and I thank you for taking the time to be on with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Take care. Let me make a few more announcements. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted to Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and also here on the UA campus at voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll see some of our past shows. There's also a link on the Counseling Center website to voices.ua.edu. It's at counseling.ua.edu. So let me thank a few people who always make our show possible. Dr. Greg Vanderwall, he's our executive director here at the Counseling Center. Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media, my production assistant, Catherine Howell, and my colleagues here at the Counseling Center. The WVUA staff, especially Lauren Smith, she edits our shows for us, and my guest tonight, Dr. Brian King. We'll be off next week, but then we'll be back, I think it's on November 16th, with a show on changing how we feel by changing how we eat. So I need to pay attention to that and do a lot of research for that show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.